It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Tuesday morning, October 4th. I'm Steve Cole, live in our Carbondale studios with News Director Gavin Dahl. Good morning once again, Gavin.
Good morning, Steve. Garfield County Commissioners will review the proposed 2017 budget at a work session today. The county's mill levy is controversial, particularly for municipalities within GARCO. Approximately $400,000 allocated to roads and bridges may get shifted to the general fund, which could mean it doesn't get divided up by local municipalities. Thanks to Ryan Hoffman at the Post-Independent, how this system works is a little more clear. The town of Parachute received $50,000 in 2015, but is now anticipating zero. As reported here on KDNK, Carbondale is predicting the funds will drop from an initial projection of $175,000 to around $94,000. Rifle received about $169,000 in 2015, but is now expecting only $90,000. So those are the numbers. What about the impacts? In Rifle, the road and bridge money from Garfield County is used for snow plowing and other basic street operations. Hoffman reports that Garfield County is far from a doomsday scenario, even with oil and gas property tax revenues projected to drop by 50% next year. The county has amassed over $128 million in reserves. Most governments aim to maintain one-third of operating budgets in reserve. GARCO reserves are over 100% of a normal operating budget. Also on the agenda for Garfield County Commissioners today, a discussion of affordable housing led by Garfield County Housing Authority Executive Director K.T. Gazunis. Several dead voters have cast ballots in Colorado, according to a recent report from CBS4 in Denver, while Colorado's Secretary of State says it's not a rampant problem. Any amount of fraud is too much. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
Republican Wayne Williams says his office is examining causes of fraud. Right now, he says the state cross-checks voter registration with death records from the Colorado Health Department and a federal database that has Social Security numbers.
It's important to us as we go through this process that we don't remove someone who has the same name as somebody else. I'll give you an example. There are two Wayne Williamses with the exact same birth date. We both live in Colorado Springs.
Williams says Colorado still has one of the cleanest voter rolls in the country, even though keeping up with deaths and other changes is a constant challenge. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
Colorado's General Assembly is made up of 65 representatives and 35 senators. Each state senator represents approximately 123,000 people during a four-year term. Carbondale and all of Garfield County are in Senate District 8. Our senator, Republican Randy Baumgardner, is running for re-election but hasn't responded to KDNK's interview request. Yesterday, we played you part one of my interview with his opponent, Emily Tracy. Here's the second half of that conversation. Colorado has struggled for years to adequately fund education. What do you think we should do?
Oh, another very difficult question. We're struggling long and have been struggling, if you want to use that word, long term with the restrictions of Tabor, the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights passed in the early 90s by Colorado voters. We know that there's still strong support for some of those aspects of Tabor. People don't want to see out of control government spending, but at the same time, people also know that their public schools are very important to them. They're not only important to children, our children and grandchildren who go to school in public schools in Colorado, but it's also important to recognize that public schools are really at the core of our democracy in this country. Well-educated populace is what we need to elect really good public servants to help us continue on as a state and as a nation in a very successful way. So we have got to solve that. The burden of public school funding has fallen more and more to the states because local government under Tabor has not been able to raise property taxes to fund as they did in the past. So we really have to look at that. I know that there's been a lot of work done at the state to make sure we maintain enough funding for public schools. But rural schools, frankly, are suffering in the process. I've talked to a number of people in rural school districts that are very concerned about the reduced funding that they have.
Broadband has become an essential service, but the state legislature has created obstacles for local jurisdictions seeking to address the issue. Now, 60 governments have already gone to voters and said, wouldn't you like us to be able to do something about this? Every single district across the state has said yes, but the General Assembly hasn't acted. What do you think they should do?
I know it's been a long-term issue for rural Colorado, and it's unfortunate. I have the impression that the urban and suburban-dominated legislature just doesn't recognize the problem out here, that we all need high-speed internet access in order to participate in the 21st century economy. I was involved with an advocacy group in Southern Colorado when I lived there back in the 90s, and we were talking then about the need for broadband and high-speed internet all through rural Colorado, and here we are in 2016 still talking about it. So yeah, some local counties and cities are doing things on their own, which is wonderful if they can afford to do it. I know that Garfield County is looking at some things. Rio Blanco County had some saved up energy money that they're using to install fiber optic cable to homes in Meeker and Rangeley. But I also know that there's other areas that don't have those kinds of resources, and they're looking at either rural electric companies or others to help with that. So it's an issue that people are trying to solve locally, but I think the state has got to take a close look at what kind of regulatory scheme they've created that is getting in the way of this happening. And we have to look at this the same way we looked at getting electricity to rural parts of the United States many decades ago, and the same way we looked at installing landline phones decades ago to rural Colorado. It's the same kind of need, and so we've got to solve it and do it in a relatively quick fashion.
It's very difficult to win an election without raising money. Who are your largest donors, and do you think campaign finance reform is even possible?
Well, we do have, to some degree, we do have campaign finance reform in Colorado, and have had that for more than a decade here. It's, for better or worse, it's kind of an interesting scheme for candidates. We can only collect a relatively small amount of money from individual donors or from what we call PACs. We can collect more from political parties, and we can collect more from what's called small donor committees, in which many people contribute up to $50 a year, and then they're able to compile that and contribute to a legislative candidate at about $4,850 per election cycle. So my largest donors are probably political parties and several small donor committees, such as Conservation Colorado, and a union or two. So those are my largest donors.
And finally, I'd like to ask you to comment on your opponent. Senator Randy Baumgartner is a Republican.
Well, in a short amount of time, I would say, I've been walking in 14 communities, towns and cities in this large district, talking with voters at the door, talking with voters in meetings and so forth. And what I hear most commonly for people who know about our current senator at all, I hear these common themes that he's not responsive to them. He doesn't respond to emails. He doesn't respond to phone calls. I've even heard that from local government officials in several counties in the district. And he doesn't seem to get out and talk with voters in any regular, comprehensive way. And it's really, I think more and more people are recognizing that he's disconnected from this district, and in addition, he's often not voting in the best interests of this district. He seems to be voting more in line with what his party folks tell him, and kind of the front range based party folks that are providing him information and guidance, I assume, on how to vote. It's just a perfect illustration of why we need a change in this district, and why we need someone who's willing to really talk with everyone in this very diverse, large district and find ways to find common ground, common interests, and be a strong voice on behalf of those interests.
Emily Tracy, Democratic candidate for Colorado Senate District 8, is on Facebook at Emily Tracy for Colorado Senate and Twitter at E.T. Breck. Thanks so much for speaking to Katie and Kay.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Good to be here.
That was Democratic Colorado State Senate candidate Emily Tracy. Part one of the interview aired yesterday. They're both available on our website at kdnk.org. Incumbent Republican Senator Randy Baumgartner has not responded to Katie and Kay's request for an interview for 2 weeks now. We hope we'll have a chance to ask him the same questions before ballots are mailed out 2 weeks from now. For Katie and Kay, I'm Gavin Dahl.
It wasn't until 1870 that the 15th Amendment gave African-American men the right to vote, and blacks are still waiting in line, that is. Garrett Galatis reports.
As the presidential race tightens, voter turnout could play a decisive role, and a new study warns that some Americans may have a harder time casting ballots than others. Spencer Overton with the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies says data from the last presidential election points to serious shortcomings in how polling is managed in communities of color.
African Americans, on average, waited up to twice as long as whites to vote. Long lines reduced turnout and also cost time and money.
He says some black communities waited in line up to 7 hours to vote in 2012. Nationwide, the study found white voters waited an average of 12 minutes to vote, compared with 19 minutes for Latinos and 23 minutes for African Americans. Overton says long lines deterred at least 730,000 Americans from voting and notes that just over 500 votes were enough to determine the outcome of the 2000 presidential election. Lack of poll workers, voting machines, and cuts to the number of early voting days are largely responsible for the delays, Overton says. He points to a Pew study that found 1 in 8 registration records are invalid or have serious errors, making it hard to accurately predict resources needed to match voter turnout and then find voter records when they finally get to the front of the line.
Amusement parks and other public venues manage wait times and lines with a science called queuing theory, where they collect data and they make sure adequate resources are in place. This should be applied to voting.
He says to reduce wait times, states, counties, and cities should also adopt and enforce minimum wait time standards, provide adequate funding for voting machines and workers, expand early vote days, and add the option of voting by mail. This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.
Mark your calendar, the 8th Street Bridge in Glenwood Springs will be closed to vehicle traffic from this Saturday, October 8th to Tuesday, October 18th. The bridge closure will have a significant impact on school traffic. School buses cross the bridge 24 times a day. Parents and school district staff cross it hundreds of times each day. In the morning, students will be transferred from bus to bus at Glenwood Springs High School. For busloads of middle school students who live in South Glenwood, Soperus Elementary will be a transfer station in the afternoons. For more information, contact the school district. In Aspen, Main Street is closed this week from 7:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. between Galena and Spring Streets for replacement of a water line. And at the north end of the Grand Avenue Bridge in Glenwood, the right turn to 6th Street will be closed Monday through Friday for the next 3 weeks. Morning commuters in West Glenwood Springs should expect 20-minute delays in the exit 114 interchange of I-70 for another few weeks, while the eastbound off-ramps in a one-lane configuration. So things getting a little dicey, getting on and off the highway there in Glenwood.